Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Laura. I'm nervous, right? I'm nervous because I feel so overwhelmed with gratitude to Alcoholics Anonymous. I feel like so blessed to be here and like just so honored. And I really want to thank the committee for inviting me because who knew? Like, I'm going to share my story. And I also especially want to thank Dave and Carol and Larsine and Butch, who I met in Maui and how this kind of came about. I really want to thank my sponsor and my best friend who came with me and my friend Mo, who showed up tonight. But thank you to the committee. This is just like, these are like blessings beyond my wildest dreams. I never thought I was going to be alive by the time I was 19, you know? And here I am in California, legally. that has not always been my experience. and I've been invited to share my experience, strength, and hope. And so before I pray, before I start, I always pray. And I always say, God, please help me get out of my head and into my heart and let the words that I speak be yours. And then I just leave it to God because I really have no idea what's coming out of my mouth. but I've only got one story, and my sponsor reminds me of that every time. Like, I can't make it up. This is just my story. So if you've heard it before, I apologize. It's the exact same story. welcome to anybody that might be new or coming back. I've sat in both those seats. My sobriety date is March 25th, 2007, and it is not the first time that I got sober. I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1991. And to back up a little bit, I grew up in an alcoholic home. My mom had me when she was 16 years old, and she was brutally addicted to drugs and alcohol. And what that looked like in our home is that every tragedy you can imagine that would happen to an abandoned child happened to me. You know, it's my story, but it doesn't make me alcoholic. I started drinking alcohol when I was 5 years old, alcoholically. And I say that, and it sounds absolutely insane to me, right? If it sounds insane to you, to me too, right? But my sponsor's familiar with this. I have two pictures from my childhood, and both of them I'm under the age of five, and both of them I have a drink in my hand, a beer in one and an alcoholic beverage in the other. And that's literally the way I grew up. I wasn't looked after. The things that happened to me on a daily basis were easier to face with alcohol. And when I discovered alcohol and I discovered the effects that it had on my body, and I discovered the fact that it could take me out of me and I could get through the night, I started seeking it, I started hiding it, I started hoarding it, and I just started, you know, drinking it. And you know, maybe I didn't start drinking alcoholically, but, you know, I grew up in a world where it was really acceptable. My mom would, she would abandon us, and I will tell you, I got a letter this week from my mom, who was just about 27 years sober, and she said, I'm so proud of the woman that you are, and what happened to you, you didn't deserve, and I'm going to continue making a living amend for the rest of my life. And she's a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you did that, right? I love the heck out of my mom, and I don't hold any resentment at all for anything that happened to me as a child. The steps did that for me. Like, so if you're wondering if it's possible to let go of everything and to stop being a victim, I'm living proof of it. You know, I was allowed to smoke in my home by the time I was seven. I sold drugs at school by the time I was 8 years old. I left home when I was 12 years old. I ended up in the streets in downtown Vancouver. And, I stayed on the streets for a number of years. I did everything that you can imagine. Mostly, I found ways and means of doing things to continue being loaded. Right? I sold my soul. We talk in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we use all kinds of words that sound so weird, but, you know, I did this thing called geographic curing, right? And every single time my life would completely blow up, I would leave cities and towns and jobs and people, and so I've lived all over the world, and you know, I got to this place where where I wanted to die more than I wanted to live. I felt so much shame. And the only thing that gave me any relief was drinking alcohol. And when I picked up a drink, I'm exactly the way, you know, it talks about in the big book. I never had any control, right? Like, I just never knew when I was going to stop. And I never knew when I'd quit. I never knew what was going to happen. And it was always horrible. And so whenever something horrible happened, I would have to justify and rationalize that. And I would have to blame you. I'd blame my past. I'd blame my childhood. I'd blame my mother. I'd blame the people that had abused me. But the truth was, you know, Finding Alcoholics Anonymous has helped me take responsibility for those choices that I made. It's helped me own it and let go of that need to be a victim. And I just am not anymore. I am so responsible for my life, but you guys did that for me. You know, I continued to do the what we call the geographic cure, and I moved across the country several times back and forth, and I quit school in grade 10, and to this day I have a grade 9 education. It blows me away, right? Because little by slowly you guys have put me back together. And anyways, I ended up taking a man hostage and getting married on my 18th birthday, and the poor guy, he did not know my age, because I met him in a bar, and I didn't know that you could come back from that. So he assumed the drinking age in Canada is 19, and I guess he just assumed I was an adult and I wasn't going to come clean. So then I thought I had it all planned out, right? I'm super clever as an alcoholic, and I can maneuver all the lies constantly. And so I thought, if I get married on my 18th birthday, I don't got to find my parents to get a signature and everything will be good. But it turns out you need a marriage license 3 days before your birth or before you get married, right? So I had to come clean to this man that I'm about to be married to, that I'm like 4 years younger than he thinks, which means like I'm a youth. And he's an adult, and we're about to have a baby, and we're getting married in 3 days. And so, like, that's the kind of stuff I did, though, right? Like, I conned and lied and manipulated to get what I wanted, and I took hostages, and I didn't care who I affected. And what happened for me in that marriage is I had a beautiful little girl who is 29 years old today, and I'm that self-centered, selfish alcoholic. I was overwhelmed, and I didn't know how to be a mom, and I was terrified I was going to mess it up the way that my mother had messed it up. And I used to use that story to justify and rationalize the reasons that I abandoned that child. I used to tell myself as if it was my truth. But the truth is, I was consumed with self-centeredness. I am an alcoholic that, you know, alcohol is just a symptom in my disease. I am self-centered and selfish to the core. And when I was failing at being a mom, I didn't want to show up and give her everything I got. I ran away from that marriage, and I conned and manipulated him to pay for me to go back to Vancouver because I was in Ontario. And I abandoned that child. And I would like to, you know, tell you the story that I told everybody else until I came out to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God I left her. He was a good man. If she had to have one parent, she should have him. And I used to do that so that I could live in my skin. You know, I used to lie, and until I got a chance to work the steps and live the steps in my life, I didn't realize how to the core self-centered I was, you know, and I abandoned that child, and I continued to do what I'd always done. I found people and ways and means to get more, you know, and when I pick up the first one, I will do absolutely anything to get more. I will, I will do despicable, demoralizing things, and I will not care. And I continued to do the geographical cure. When I destroyed or decimated my life again in Vancouver, I moved to the Hawaii, and it was not legal at that time for me to be there. That was one of my opportunities here in the U.S. I had an alias and some ID, and I ended up at my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I OD'd, and I went to a hospital, and when I came to in the hospital, they put me in a detox center, and at the detox center, they bused us to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was October of 1991, and I was not ready to get sober. I was 21 years old, and I'm telling you, they were like, you guys were like, it felt like a meeting this big, and they asked if anybody was new, and they cheered you on, and I was just like, holy cow, I just had a bad night.
Like, what the heck is going on here, right? Like I did not, I wasn't trying to change anything. If so-and-so had just showed up with what they said they were going to at the right time, I would not be here. Like, I didn't say anything about getting sober, you know? And so I quickly left you guys, but the seed had been planted. And continuing to do what I did, I ended up moving to Osaka, Japan. And in Osaka, Japan, doing what I did, I ended up at a lot of live shows. And I went to a concert one night with a really famous band. And it was there that the message of Alcoholics Anonymous was carried to me. I guess I'd met the keyboard earlier that night, player earlier that night, and he thought we were going to end up together. And this is so embarrassing, but I was in a blackout. I ended up with the front man, and this is just what I did, right? And as we're walking to the hotel room, the keyboard player throws a case of beer at me, and it just narrowly misses us. And I barely remember it, except that when I came to the next morning, my phone was ringing, and somehow I'd made it home. I don't recall the rest of the night. And it was this keyboard player saying, "Hey, we're at the airport. And what I did to you last night was unacceptable. I belong to a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's not okay the way I treated you, and I need to make an amend for my behavior." I had no idea what he was talking about. Who says amend? What is that? Right? Like, who uses these words? I have no... Who are you? Which one are you? You know? Like, I had no idea, right? And he says, would it be okay if we stayed in touch? And like, I'm not dumb, right? He was in a famous rock band. Of course you can keep my number, right? Like, yeah. But you know what happened is I came back to Vancouver and I picked up ways and means of doing things that in about 4 months I had spiraled to a place where I was 50 pounds lighter than I am today. I had scabs all over my body. I was living on the streets again. And this gentleman had continued to talk to me over the course of 4 months. And not one time did he ever say, "You should go to Alcoholics Anonymous." But he started to share his story with me, and he started to give me a doorway to still be connected to somebody that maybe got what I was doing and what I was going through. And he didn't preach to me. He just like, "Hey, how you doing?" And I remember, like, vaguely we would talk, and it got to that place where on the very last day I started to trust him, and I started to open up to him about what I was actually doing and the ways and means I was getting loaded that were keeping me so sick and so wanting to die. The last day that he talked to me, I think I'd been awake for like 9 days. I was in a place that you don't want to be in, and I was talking to him, and it was the final day that he said to me, "What about detox?" And it resonated with me, but here's how it resonated. I'm no dummy, right? I owed just enough people just enough money that detox seemed like a great idea, right? And I also knew that when you started to tell people that you were going to change your life, that, you know, if you make a plan to go to detox, first of all, you do, in Vancouver, you don't get in on day one. You usually, like, a couple of weeks, they want to feel your sincerity. You got to call every day. They tell you to call back tomorrow. If a bed comes available, how bad is your case? Grandma, grandpa, my mom, they were always calling detox. I knew how it all worked, right? And so I knew, though, that if I told everybody, then my next calls could be, could I just get a little money because I'm going to change my life, and I could con and manipulate until I got into detox. And the reality is I wanted more, right? But this weight of owing these people that wanted to do really bad things to me was there. So I agreed to at least make the call, right? And I called what was Pender Detox back then. It was 1992 or 93, and it's no longer there, but they said to me, "Be here in an hour." Well, don't you know I was busy? Like, you know, I wasn't even in my own home, but I had a box of CDs. It was the last thing I was going to sell. And I guess in my state, like, remember, I was, like, in psychosis, 9 days awake. I had called an aunt who was the last person to shut the door and say, "Don't call us anymore. We know you're going to be dead. We can't handle any more in between now and that. Just leave us alone. When we get that call, we'll make sure that you're cremated. We don't want to talk to you anymore." And I guess in that state, from the call to detox to the desire to sell the CDs and not go to detox, I had called my aunt and I had asked her to come and get me. And she showed up at this place that you don't want to be at, and she bundled me up and she put me in a cab and she brought me to detox. And it was really my first true experience of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I don't know, like I slept for days, and members of Alcoholics Anonymous brought a meeting in. And, you know, I don't think that I heard anything in those first few meetings, but I heard things like, if you want what we have, and I am not going to lie, the men that came to detox with their leather jackets and their triple-soled Daytons, I wanted a little of that. That's what got me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the truth. I was like, wow, these guys are cool. They're like my people. You know, like I would like to, they're sober? Who does that? Right? And why? Like forever? Like that's just crazy, right? And I had no idea that you could live a life that was happy and joyous and free. I had no idea it was possible, and that there were people like me that had done the things I had done and didn't look at me like I was a disgusting whore. Because I had looked at me for so long like that. And they suggested that I go to a sober living facility, which is not Alcoholics Anonymous, but it was a place for me to go so that I could put some days back to back and be sober. It could, at that sober living facility, I started to get Gold Star Recovery. They told me to get a big book and get a sponsor and get a home group and get a service position. And I was just so happy to have a clean bed and to be eating and to be a part of, and for people not to cringe when I walk by them, that I remember just wanting to be somebody to approve of me for the first time, because my whole life nobody wanted me. And I just did everything they said, and one of the things they suggested was go to treatment, and treatment is not Alcoholics Anonymous. But I went to a co-ed facility that was suggested to me, and I did what every broken alcoholic brand new woman does. I met the man of the love of my life, right? I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous and the Big Book, because, and really, really good sponsorship, because my Big Book says that we're not arbiters of anybody's sex conduct. It means what my sponsor said to me is, it is none of my business whether you get in a relationship or not. I am not going to tell you how this is going to go down. You may not be prepared for one. She said you may get your heart broken. You may do things that you're ashamed of because there hasn't been enough change yet. Maybe. But through all of those things, I can help you stay sober. And that's my role in Alcoholics Anonymous. My role is not to become a guru. My role is not to become your dictator. My role is not to run your life. In fact, honey, I'm an alcoholic woman. You do not want me to run your life. Trust me on this. And, you know, through good sponsorship, I also believe that that relationship saved my life. You know, because when I came to you in Alcoholics Anonymous, already in a relationship, 30 days sober, you know, what do? We moved in together, of course, right? Unfortunately for me, he lived in a place called Surrey. If you know Vancouver, Surrey is a suburb that, I don't know, what would it be like? Equivalent to like your Crenshaw, or I don't know, it's not pretty. But like, it turns out there's really good Alcoholics Anonymous there. And, you know, had I not been in that relationship with that gaping wound that hadn't yet been filled with the 12 steps and a God of my understanding, I would have slept with all of you. I would not have picked any favorites. Men, women, like whatever it took to get out of me, that is how I behave when I don't have a God of my understanding filling me up and the ability to be of service. That's what I do. And so that relationship saved my life. It saved me from more shame, from more remorse, from more things that I had to make an amend for. And, you know, we stayed in that relationship for just over 3 years. And it was so amazing to grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous and have you people put me completely back together. You know, my home group, we didn't get to like, I mean, I go to a lot of business meetings, right, over the years. And typically you get voted in and you volunteer for things. And, you know, that was not my experience in the early 90s in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got told every service position. I was like, I don't know about you, but I would come to meetings. I used to smoke. I've been a non-smoker come January for 20 years. And but I was like self-centered to the core, right? So I would come to a meeting. The meeting would end, and I was racing outside for, like, this is how self-centered I am. I'm sure none of you ever do this. Racing outside for a cigarette, like, the old-timers would say, listen, princess, who's picking up your damn chair? What, are you that self-centered? And I would be so offended. And I would think, that's just so mean. I'm a newcomer. And they would be like, honey, you pick up your chair because you are self-centered and selfish, and you're going to start right here in your home group. Back then, you could smoke in the meetings, and so I literally had an ashtray hucked at my head once as I was just about out the door, and they were like, sweetheart, your turn to clean the ashtrays and the coffee cups. And you know what I didn't know in my resentful state as I marched to the kitchen to get to the soapy water and wash ashtrays and coffee cups is that they had noticed that I only looked at my shoes. And that I didn't interact with you in any way, shape, or form. And that by washing the coffee cups and taking care of the ashtrays, not only were they helping me with my disease of self-centeredness, they were helping me meet you. So that the next meeting I went to, there was a chance I'd run into somebody that I knew and I could say hello. And I wouldn't feel so alone and I could start to feel a part of. You know, I'd sit at the back of the room, this one old-timer, he's still in my life today, he's 64 years sober, and he's, anybody that knows me knows Newtonville is my, like my Alcoholics Anonymous father, and he's 94 years old, and he used to grab me by the ear, because I was cool too, right, like super cool, long time ago, right, but like cool, and I'd sit in the back of the room, right, and I'd judge everybody, and he'd grab me by the ear, and he'd put me up at the front of the room, and he'd say, you want to live or die? You can go back there and die by yourself. But he was my ride home. So I had to, like, shut up and just sit in the front row, right? And, like, you know, I'm so grateful. I remember I went to an Evalco series, which, again, is not Alcoholics Anonymous, and I met people from other fellowships, and I met this woman from another 12-step program, and she was driving me. And as you go through this particular experience of doing the steps, they uncover and discover who you are, and you start to share a little bit of your story. And every week, her car smelled new. And every single week I would get in and I would feel a little dirty, like I didn't belong in that car. And any day she's going to know me and she's not going to want me in her car. And one day she asked to meet me at this park. And I thought, it's okay. Like, everybody's always, like, gotten rid of me. I'm good. I can handle this. She's just going to say, it's not really working for me to drive you anymore. Like, this is how little self-esteem I had. And I sat in the park with her and she offered me a job. She said, you know, I got this 30-day customer service job for you. I had never even turned a computer on in my life. I'd never had a square job, so I went back to my home group, and I said, I got to put a resume together. And they said, well, sweetheart, what have you done? And so I got honest with them, and they said, well, then you're fabulous at customer service and sales. And I had been cleaning, you know, helping out at my home group for a couple of years, and I'd had service positions. So those were my references. And they helped me put a resume together that it appeared on my resume as if I was this extraordinary volunteer person. But, you know, like they put little by slowly, you guys put me back together. And you know, a grateful member of Al-Anon drove me to work for a while. She taught me. I will never forget the night she taught me how to drive. Like, she taught me over time, but this last night before I had to go and get my license, it was a storm in Vancouver. She came all the way from Surrey to Vancouver. And I always say, like, only a grateful member of Al-Anon could ever have taught me how to parallel park, right? She was so patient with me. They gave me clothes, taught me how to talk like a lady. You know, and I showed up at that first day, and I didn't know how to turn on the computer. And so immediately, my immediate reaction to feeling uncomfortable, embarrassed, or nervous is I'm out. I know how this works. I don't need to look like an idiot. And I was about to run out of that office and tell them, forget it, I'm not doing this. I needed a drink so bad. And she noticed that I was feeling that way, and she sat me in her office, and we said a prayer, and we had a cigarette. And she went back out to my cubicle, and she turned the computer on. And a few weeks later, I'll never forget the day that I ran out of staples. That may not seem like a big deal to you, but I had never put staples in a stapler before. And I hadn't got to the place where I could ask you for help. And so that moment in time was that same reaction in my body where I just wanted to run. I just wanted to say, forget it. I can't do this. I'm not made for this square life. I'm nothing but a junkie whore. I can't do it anymore. And she saw me, and she called me into her office, and we said a prayer, and we had a cigarette, and I got through another day sober. And she taught me how to put staples in a stapler. And those are big deals for me, because I remember how that felt. It felt like wanting a drink. It felt like wanting to run away. It felt like I didn't deserve this life. And you know, little by slowly, you guys put me back together and my life started being unrecognizable. 2 years later, I was the purchasing manager for Canada, and that's not to impress you. It was just like, it impresses the heck out of me, right? Like, I was just like, oh my gosh, how is this happening? And all of a sudden, I ended that relationship. And I got into another one about 6 months later. And this man was not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he hated you. He would drop me up at meetings and he would say things like, when are you going to hang out with those losers? And I didn't think that at all. And I didn't feel like that at all. And we started a business that became very, very successful. And we had 50 employees. We moved to a home in the hills, had a nanny and a housekeeper and a pool, and my life was unrecognizable from the woman that came to you. The outsides were incredible, but little by slowly, I allowed him, see, not his fault. He never changed from the day I met him. I gave up little pieces of me and my connection with you so that I could get what I defined as love and attention. And I gave it all up to the point that after many years of sobriety, I stopped going to meetings. And I stopped going to meetings and I made my outsides everything. I had another baby who's now 18 and a half, and you know, about when she was about 2.5 years sober, I got to this place because he controlled everything I did. He controlled when I talked. He controlled what I ate. He controlled. And remember, I say that knowing that I allowed him to do that, that I created that, that I showed up for that. But I became this woman that was like a whipped horse. You guys had made me into this vibrant, confident woman that walked down the street sober, being of service, loving and feeling the juice of what it was like to work with a newcomer or just put chairs away and clean coffee cups, self-esteem that I'd never experienced before. I had 12-stepped my mother, and so now she was staying sober. Like, it was, you know, I 12-stepped my mom naked out of a crack house, and she's 27 years sober today. 26, sorry, 26. And, like, that's a miracle, right? And, you know, I got to this place like I was a whipped horse and I didn't speak unless spoken to, and I hadn't gone to a meeting in a couple of years, and maybe 2.5 years, and I picked up a drink because here's what I needed to do to justify and rationalize the distance I was putting between me and you. It occurred to me that I was probably not alcoholic. I mean, wasn't the whole point to get a life? And if you had grown up the way I grew up, you would have drank and drugged the way that I had. I mean, it was so obvious to me. You don't want to get addicted to those meetings, right? And so, like, I've got a life now worth living. And so I don't need that. I'm not even an alcoholic. I would never drink like that again. Why would I ever drink like that again? I have this fulfilled, successful life and a child, and you know, it was all such a lie, but that's the denial that I needed to be in so that I could justify and rationalize when I really began giving up the pieces of me that were the most important, like my integrity, like my ability to show up as a friend. I stopped answering your calls because to answer your calls made me feel guilty and I felt ashamed and I couldn't find a reason not to go, and so it was just easier to let go of all the friendships and the relationships. And you know, I picked up that first drink and I didn't drink alcoholically that day, and all that did was fed the denial. See, I'm not alcoholic the way the big book said. No allergy kicked in here. And, you know, one day, right, white knuckling it, like, God, that was good, but I'm not going to drink another, you know? That was so good. And it, like, gross, right? It took 4 years of absolute hell to completely decimate my life. I lost everything. I sold everything of worth. I lost my partnership. I lost my My vehicle had been repossessed. I had dog feces in my living room because I was too sketchy to go outside and walk the dog. I had an eviction notice on the door, and I was terrified to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to so bad because that guy, Newton Bill, the entire 4 years, he would call me about every 3 months, three, four months, and he would say to me, "Just calling to say I love you. Just wanted you to know I love you." And he's taught me how to be of service in that way in Alcoholics Anonymous. He's taught me not to call people that are out and say, "When are you coming back? We miss you around here." Because had he said that one time, I would have stopped answering the phone. And you know what he did? He left a door open to Alcoholics Anonymous. In his wisdom that you've given him and taught him over decades and decades of experience, he knew he was my lifeline. And he knew to call me, and I felt no shame or guilt. I felt love, but I didn't deserve it. And, one day I finally came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I sat in the back, and you asked, "Is there anybody coming back?" And I'd raise my hand, and you would come up to me, and you would say, "Can we help?" And I'd say, "Oh, no, that's good. I was sober many, many years. I'm going to get a big book and a sponsor and a home group and a step group, but thanks so much. I'm good." And, I would go get drunk that day. I was going to tons of meetings, but the ego was not smashed. I was so embarrassed that I had drank again, and I thought I knew everything. See, I didn't know how to practice step one. And step one for me, as it's been written and how it's been shared with me, is if I'm powerless over my unmanageability, which is my thinking, not the stuff I do when I'm drunk, right? Like, because non-alcoholics do crappy things when they drink. You know, they abandon their children and don't pay their rent and beat their wives and all kinds of, even get DUIs. But I'm an alcoholic, and my thinking is broken. My thinking thinks that I can control the next drink. My thinking thinks that this time will be different, and I am completely powerless over that. And what happens is when I put that first drink in my body, I don't know when I'm going to stop. I have no control over that, but I think I will. Right? And if I'm powerless, then I need a power, and I'm going to have to ask for help. And so for me, that's living step one, asking for help. And you know, I will tell you, I was in and out and in and out and in and out for a year. I was going to 3 meetings a day, and I was pushing you away, and I was getting drunk that night, and I was literally slamming my fist on the counter going, "How am I drunk? I went to 3 meetings today. I wasn't going to get drunk today." And I knew it, like I meant it. I meant it, and I couldn't stay sober. And my sponsor who's here today, I've known her for 26 years now. She knew me when I was skinny. She never gave up on me. She kept doing the same thing. That whole year and a half, she just kept calling and saying, "Hey, just thinking about you. Hope you're having a good day." Nothing that had anything that resonated with guilt and shame. And one day, these women talked me into going to a women's retreat. Not Alcoholics Anonymous, but a place where we also get together and do the 12 steps. And, you know, it's where all the shiny, happy, skinny chicks hang out. You know who I'm talking about, right? They're all friends with each other. They're all gorgeous in bikinis. You know, they all just love themselves, and you don't fit in, right? So this is my mind at under 30 days sobriety. And I'm out there, and I'm crawling out of my skin, and I'm terrified. And I had seen the woman that is my sponsor, but I had so little self-esteem, I hadn't said hello. Because had she not remembered me, I think I might have died. You know, like I just didn't feel a part of yet, right? And so just when I couldn't do it anymore, I just, like, these people all love each other and know each other, and I'm not fitting in. I can't do this. And I'm coming out of my skin, and what that looks like for me is I want to drink. I'm thirsty. I got to drink. And I was just about, I'm in, by the way, Bumchuck Port Moody, which is, like, I've got no car, as I mentioned, right? So, like, I've got this plan. I'm going to hitchhike back into Vancouver. I'm going downtown. I'm going to get loaded. I got to get loaded. It's the only solution that I have before I have the 12 steps and a power greater than myself. And I walk down these 3 steps. Thank you so much. And Margareta yells my name out, and she says, "Hey, Laura." And so she remembered my name. And I walk over to her, and she's with her sponsor, Lee. And they said, how you doing? And up till then, the bravado was all my answer. Fine, good, awesome, whatever, right? And inside, I'm dying. And I just burst into tears. And I said, I'm not doing good. And if this is sobriety, I can't do it anymore. I just want to drink. I just want to die. I can't do it anymore. And Lee says, well, your timing's perfect because Margarita is going to sponsor you. And I have never been able to pick anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't get to pick my positions. I don't get to pick what I do. I just show up, you know, and in the early days, I used to think that my sponsor was my employee. I don't know if you've ever done this, but like you can fire your sponsor, right? You forget they do it for fun and for free, right? Like, and I used to think she should be available to me whenever I wanted, at the exact time I wanted, for all the stuff I wanted, and as long as I needed, right? Like an employee, right? Gosh, I'm self-centered, like so self-centered, right? She does this for fun and for free. And, you know, a big life started to happen for me in early sobriety this time, and I got served with custody papers. 3 weeks in. And you know what? The truth is, I should have lost my children. Because when I pick up the first drink, I will do things like go out for a drink and say I'm coming back and not show up for 4 days. And I'm talking about, you know, a 5 and 6 year old and a 13 year old that's holding it together. And I will crawl over their bodies to get to their piggy banks to steal their money to go get more. That's the kind of alcoholism I'm capable of. And you know, so I should have lost my children, but now I'm 3 weeks sober, and I want my babies. I don't want to lose my kids. And I would call Margarita, and I talk about my sponsors interchangeably. I've always had a male and a female sponsor, and my male sponsor tricked me into doing a set of steps with him by walking up to me at a meeting when I was a week. When I was a week sober, and asking if I would help him read step one. I was like, I'm a week sober, dude. What do you need help for? No, honey, like it would really help me, you know? He said, my sponsor says I need help reading the big book. Do you think you could help me? I was like, okay, like that's weird. And I discovered that he was just tricking me into doing the steps, right? And so I talk about them interchangeably, but so this big life was happening, and I would call my sponsor, and I would say, you know, oh, I got to tell you about it. I just want to, I didn't say these words, but I got to verbally vomit all over you, right? Because my life is big, and it feels horrible right now, and I've just got to do that. And they would say, shh, a little bit busy right now, but you know what I need you to do? Go to a meeting, find a newcomer, take the newcomer out for coffee, ask them how they're doing. Now, this is really good. Shut up. Wait for the answer, right? And then call me after you've got that done. And I would think, that is like, I should fire this sponsor. That's not a good sponsor, right? Like you're supposed to listen to me. I've got life happening. I'm falling apart here. How is that a solution? I got nothing to give. And I knew that untreated alcoholism for me, they saw it, and they saw the self-centeredness that I was consumed with, and they knew I needed to do the opposite. And I would go to a meeting, and you know, if I sponsor you today and there's anything going on in your life, you're going to go newcomer shopping, because I do not believe that we go to meetings for me. I go to meetings for the privilege of finding a newcomer and helping them. I go to a meeting, and we have a plethora of them. People new and coming back. And somehow, in my experience, it's been a little diluted. And this does not have to be your experience, but it's mine. We have some laundry list of stuff that newcomers are supposed to do. You got to walk up to us, and you got to ask us for our number. Tell me where that says it in the big book. Because that has not been my experience. It doesn't say, in fact, in the forewords, it says, strenuous effort, one alcoholic with another, is vital to permanent recovery. And, you know, my sponsor has often said, what do you think strenuous means? Huh. It's like difficult, uncomfortable, you know, maybe not convenient, right? And, you know, Bill and Bob, it's like we piecemeal the big book sometimes, right? Like, well, I really like what, you know, page 83 says. But when it talks about them frantically going to look for alcoholics to help, I don't think that works today because we're 2017, right? I don't pick parts of the big book that I want to apply to my life. I take it all in, and I do the best I can to live it on a daily basis. And so they had me frantically searching alcoholics. And of course, I didn't have 12 steps to take them through, but I had an ear, and I had the ability to buy them a coffee, and I had the opportunity to make them feel a part of and a community. And you know, in our big book, I've even heard people say, your sponsor's not your friend. Wow, have you not read Working with Others? In there it says, if we do this right, you will have found a friend. And that's been my experience. My sponsor's one of my best friends. How could we not become friends through going through this process of learning how to live the 12 steps? And I've trusted her with everything, and she's never abandoned me. How do you not call that a friend? How do you not call that a friend, somebody that has welcomed me into a community where I get to be a part of and taught me how to be a woman of grace and show up with dignity and be afraid and think I'm going to pee my pants before I'm going to speak, and I can tell her that stuff too, you know, and she doesn't laugh at me, and she just hugs me and prays with me and brings me to a higher power and doesn't judge me because my higher power may be different than hers. Or, you know, there's just so many things I've learned through good sponsorship. I'm forever grateful that the sponsorship that I've had has brought me to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, life has been lots of ups and downs in the last 10 years. You know, I came back to you in a relationship. I had been in a relationship for 7.5 years, and that relationship ended. And we're good friends today, but, you know, I've been single for 8 years, and I used to pray and say I was lonely. But every single time that happened, for the first 5 years, I get like 10 new sponsees in a month. And I was like, there's a total disconnect, God. Like, you know. But it turns out that that's what I need to feel of worth. You know, I need to be working in Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to be showing up at meetings when I don't want to. I need to be answering my phone at 1 a.m. when it's not convenient. I need to be putting a little money in their jeans when they need a little self-esteem. I need to be letting them sleep on my couch. None of this is what you need to do, but it's what I do and how I do Alcoholics Anonymous, because I love the chapter Working with Others, and it has changed my life. You know, it is completely, miracles have happened. My little girl, who's 29 years old, and this has been a really hard year. At my 7 years, she wasn't speaking to me when I came back to you, with good reason. She wasn't speaking to me. And I expected a badge and a trophy. I got sober. Hey, honey, I'm sober now. We should be having a relationship. It should be immediately back together. The pieces of the puzzle should all work. I'm sober, right? And she didn't even want to talk to me for the first couple years of my sobriety. I had to make a living amend without speaking to her, leaving her alone and giving her the opportunity to decide whether she wanted me in her life or not. And you know, at my 7-year cake, we allow families to speak at your cake at certain meetings in Canada. And she got up to the podium and she said, you know, if anybody's wondering if Alcoholics Anonymous works, when my mom first got sober, I hated her. I never thought I was ever going to speak to her again. And she said, I love her more than anybody in the whole wide world today. And that was 7. And last year, my little one was in the hospital for 8 months, and she's doing amazing today, but she was in the hospital for 10 months, but all of 8 months, and it was a really, really hard year. And my oldest took some responsibility around that. She helped me when I couldn't be there. My job, the job I do has me traveling 80, 90% of the time for work, and she picked up the ball, and something about that triggered her. And so up until last week, she hadn't spoke to me for 9 months. She wouldn't tell me why. She's told other people she hates me again. And, you know, I had to come to you. I didn't tell you guys that that was happening at the time. But through good sponsorship, I didn't try and change it. I just let her know I'm here. I let her know I love her. I let her know I'm not going anywhere. And about every week or 10 days, I send her a message saying, I love you. I just want you to know if you need me, I'm here. If you need to be angry, if you need to go to counseling, whatever you need, right? Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that I don't need to control her And I truly believe in a God of my understanding, and maybe this isn't about me, and maybe it's about her and her healing. And I'm just going to give her the space that she needs. And the hardest part is I'm going to be a grandma. But last week, she finally spoke to me for the first time, and she invited me to come to her baby, do her baby registry. And so I don't know where that's going. She hasn't spoken to me since. But I really believe in a God of my understanding that if we're supposed to be in each other's lives, and if I'm supposed to be an active grandmother to that child, then I will be in her life. And I'm sad, right? But I think it's okay to be sad and also be okay with it, right? Because I think it's okay to have the feelings that are appropriate for the situation today. You know, like I said, my life is beyond my wildest dreams. And if you had told me 27 years ago when I first came to my first meeting that I was going to be speaking to you in Southern California, that you guys would have put me back together, that I've had a God of my understanding, I got to tell you how I found one. Because when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and people used to share on step two, and I don't know what it means for you, but people used to stand up at the podium and they would say, I found God, this is my God, this is how I connect with my God, and I found it in step two. And I used to, when people talked of God, I would kick chairs and walk out of the room. I was brand new and I wanted none of that, okay? I would go to this old-timer, Newtonville, and I would say, what the heck? I'm in step two, and I'm not finding God. And he said to me, he brought the big book out, and he said, sweetie, we don't find God in step two. We use the key of willingness to open the door, and I promise you, you will find a power greater than yourself if you just stay willing. Stop worrying about finding, and he showed me in the big book where it says it's in the seeking. Just keep seeking. Just keep seeking. And so I stopped kicking chairs and I started sitting in the room. And he said, hey, are you capable of saying help in the morning and thank you at night? I knew he was tricking me, right? But like, I was like, oh, I could do that. To what? And, you know, I'm too cool and all of that stuff. And so I started, right? And every morning when I would wake up, I would say help. And at night when I put my head on the pillow, I would say thank you. And one day, I was walking down the street, and I had something big going on in my life, and I said, help. And I continued to have this conversation with something that wasn't Laura, and it freaked me out because I knew I just had a grain of belief. And it was in and around step six and seven where I needed to rely on a higher power for help to get rid of those defects that my relationship started to become strengthened. And then when I got in step 11, and I mean, I don't know about you, but meditation for me was like beyond anything I could conceive. And I went away, I was about 3 years sober this time, and I was like, the mess in my head, the hamster wheel never stops. And we went away kayaking with these two, this couple that were yogis, and she was a yoga instructor, and he was a yogi that on Christmas Day, he meditated for 8 hours, and I was just like, holy cow, how do you do that? And he looked at me, and he said, 1 minute at a time. Whoa. I was like, I could do a minute. Right? I could do a minute. And you know what? Gradually, I don't just pray in step 11. I actually spend time meditating. And it's not always comfortable. And sometimes it's a minute and sometimes it's longer. But like I have a practice now that connects me with Source that I feel grounded before I stand up here. I feel connected to the God of my understanding. I feel so grateful and looked after. And I've been taught that gratitude is an action word. Gratitude isn't something we say, it's something we do. And I believe that. And so I don't run around saying I'm so grateful. I show up. I do things I don't want to do. You know, I don't want to clean coffee cups. Like I don't, right? I got a busy life. But by the end of that, I feel so good that I just do whatever's put in front of me today, and you guys did that. You have changed our entire family. You know, the relationship I have with my 18-and-a-half-year-old is beyond anything you can imagine. I raised that baby, and she tells me I'm her best friend, and she means it. Like, I can't tell you what an honor that is to have a grandmother that she's never seen drink. That's a miracle in our home. My mom and I, using the traditions, have found a way to have the most beautiful relationship. You know, it is absolutely amazing to me that she is the best grandma in the whole wide world because of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. My grandmother passed away 3 or 4 years ago. I think it's 4 years ago now. And she died 3 years sober. She detoxed on my couch for about a week, and we put her in detox, and they kept her for almost a month. And she went to a treatment center, and she found sobriety through Alcoholics Anonymous before she died. And I loved her drunk. I don't care. Like, I love my grandma. But, that's a miracle, right? And so there's an opportunity here if you want it. I don't walk around feeling like a victim to all those men that traumatized me as a child. And I have had more trauma than anybody I've ever met in my life. Different. I'm not trying to own it. I'm not having a pissing contest with you. I'm just saying that I have complete freedom from it. Complete freedom. I know those people were sick. And I pray for them. And they don't own a piece of me. Not even a little bit. I don't feel angry. I don't feel upset. I feel sad that they were so sick. The steps did that. I don't, when I was in a relationship, we were talking about this yesterday, I don't hold men hostage for my past. It is not their responsibility to make up for what happened to me as a child. And in relationship, I was able to work through that in loving relationships in sobriety where I don't have to control the things that men need anymore, right? And use my past to justify and rationalize that behavior. Like the fourth step let me look at me clearly. And I just have to say that I'm beyond grateful. I cannot tell you how much you've put me back together, and I am such a work in progress. But I am like grateful to the tips of my toes, and I just once again want to say thank you to all of you for having me. Thank you to the committee for inviting me. I feel like it was a real honor to be here and get to share my story of getting sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in other speaker tapes or CDs from AA or Al-Anon, please contact us at Sound Solutions, toll free 1-877-893-2777, or visit us on the web at soundsolutionsrecording.com. We are also available to cover your recording and sound system needs. Thank you for allowing us to be of service and carrying the message.